Support for KMUW's Into Music podcast comes from McClelland, reminding listeners that Frank Sinatra coined the word skibbity in Strangers in the Night, which you can listen to in their downtown Wichita showroom. More info on McClelland's innovative sound, lighting, and video technology can be found at maxsound.com.
Hi, I'm Jed Bodwin, and you're listening to Into Music from the KMUW studios, part of the NPR Podcast Network. My guest on this episode is singer-songwriter Jacob Augustine. His new album, I Love You Forever, is out May 22nd via Team Love Records. The collection of songs, his first in a decade, is dedicated to his late mother. And although the album touches on a variety of themes, loss is just one of them. The tunes also address issues of the natural world and humankind's place within it, greed, and the nature of God. Augustine recently spoke about the album and its themes for this episode of Into Music, coming up now. I know that this is dedicated to your mom, and I don't sense that it's specifically, you know, about her passing or anything, but I also sense that there are things that seeing somebody go through that process may have informed some of these lyrics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. I think the struggle of her fight inspired some of the lyrics, especially Philadelphia Lights. I don't know, it seemed like she was kind of dealing with the turmoil that living in our country creates for people who are struggling and having health struggles and stuff like that. She had a lot of issues with insurance companies, and she had to do fundraisers at Knights of Columbus halls to raise money to pay for treatments. And so that's kind of an underlying theme in a way on the album, but the album isn't specifically about Ma that much. Philadelphia Lights is. I wanted to put her on the cover just because I wanted to honor her in that way. That picture of hers is from when she was part of the counterculture in the 60s. And I just wanted to kind of immortalize her. And not that she's not immortal anyway, but I wanted to immortalize her in a way on a vinyl and put her face in front of anybody who would listen to the music. The next album that comes after this is actually already recorded. The bones are all down. There's more bells and whistles to be recorded on that, but I would say that album is more of the mourning, reflective thing, where this one is more of like being in the storm and being terrified, dealing with your mother's fears. And, you know, mom was terrified, and you want to, I don't want to cry here. You want to do everything you can do to help someone and make them feel safe. And you kind of can't. That was really hard and frustrating. I think Philadelphia Lights kind of encompasses that a lot. That's kind of where it breaks off and gets quite personal on the album. I actually haven't sung that song since I recorded that record, because I just can't get through it physically. I get crying and choky, but I've made a promise to myself because of a songwriting friend of mine his name's James. He actually had lost a kid. When I played in the United Kingdom with him, I didn't realize that his song that I really loved was about that. Good Blood is the name of his band his act. I requested that he played this song called Little Sparrow. I didn't really know what it was about, but I knew it was about some kind of loss. But I asked him if he could play it before I ever met him, and then he closed with it that night. He told me before the set what the song was about, and from there, like, I watched him play it, and I cry every time I hear that song, Little Sparrow. It's so beautiful. When I realized what it was about, then I felt like a coward, because here he was up there braving it all and getting through this work that was about this loved one, that his loved one that he had lost. And here I've been chickening out for a really long time. And I promised to myself that at the release show that I play in Portland, Maine, we're having a little album release show party thing, that I'm going to sing it that night. And then from now on, from there, I'm going to start singing it live and bringing it back. And thanks to James from Good Blood for giving me the bravery to showing me what a brave artist looks like, opening themselves up like that live when all you really want to do when you make a song like that is just put it away in a drawer. And I mean, I can barely even listen to it, let alone sing it.
And condolences on your mom. I mean,
thank you.
It's such a hard thing because I think, you know, we see very often our parents when we're kids maybe as being, you know, these, you know, larger than life people that, you know, like they're never going to get sick and stuff like that. And then they do. And we see all these vulnerabilities and we see them in pain in a way that as their children, they probably would never want to see us, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Very true. I mean, that what you just described, that kind of like stuck with me even when she was battling. She was in stage 4 and my brain still couldn't do the math on it. Like, I believe my best friend was like, didn't you like have that in the back of your mind that she wouldn't make it, you know? And I didn't. I firmly believed that she would beat it no matter what. Obviously not, but it's a hard thing to lose your mom, especially when you're close with her, or even if you're not, you know what I mean? Like your parents are kind of like your planet, and it's like losing your planet that you came from and losing your home and your comfort. And a lot of times my most peaceful place on this earth was just laying on my mother's couch, just like listening to her kind of busy around the kitchen and cleaning up or cooking. It's just some little moments like that that you'll never have again. It's, you know, it's just like that peace and that safety. It's hard. It still is hard. It's been 10 years and it's still, I wrote a song on the anniversary of her dying this year. I woke up out of bed and it just came out of me immediately. I had a melody. I went outside and smoked a cigarette, which I should not be doing. She would hate that. And and this tune just came out. It's like still, sometimes I'm like, well, you know, someday I'll stop writing songs about you. But it seems like so often they become about her. It's tricky. I'm comfortable talking about it now, but I was diagnosed bipolar in my early 40s and I lived my whole life not knowing. I think that's why I disappeared for so long, because I just didn't process. I just couldn't process it like my siblings could. They suffered greatly too. And mom was wonderful. We were so tight with mom. Like, she was like our rock. She supported us so much. And, you know, she was a very devout Catholic woman. But she was like the devout Catholic woman that would let her kids have a death metal band in the basement, like singing about Satan. So she was really accepting and cool, you know. And yeah, she was very special. And yeah, it's something you can't really prepare for. And, you know, if you go through it, you're that person. You're one of those people. We all are going to eventually. And it's goggles you can't put on somebody else. It's the only goggles that you can wear yourself, or glasses, I guess, is a better word. But once you put on that hat, you can't take it off. But you can be there for others when that happens for them. So that's what I try to do. I try to be a friend to my friends and family when these things come and try to help them get through, because it takes a lot, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. We can move on from the cheerful stuff, in a moment, but you know, it's amazing too. Sometimes the clarity, as we're talking about this, I'm thinking of a friend of mine who passed at the beginning of this year, and she had beaten cancer and it came back, and she messaged an old school friend of ours and just said, "Hey, I want you to know, I don't have long. I'm not afraid. And when I pass, I want you to be the person who tells everybody." And, you know, he was like, "Why did she pick me?" And I'm like, "I've known you since seventh grade, and you are, you know," I told him, "you are like the most level-headed person. You were the person who wouldn't, because if she had picked me, I mean, I would have just, you know, cried. But she picked Dan, who could you know, keep it together and do what he needed to do. It was just amazing to me that she had that, you know, forethought.
Yeah, that's amazing. She was, seems like she was being really thoughtful with, thoughtful and kind in her delivery, you know.
Yeah.
Who should give the news? I'm sorry about your friend, man.
Thank you. Yeah. No, it's just that, right? It's that thing that it's, I guess, how we face those things or face a bipolar diagnosis or something, you know, that's one of those defining moments, you know?
Sure.
Yeah. But.
you know, this is, I apologize because this is generally what talking to me is like all the time. So it's.
Okay.
I tend to delve into this stuff all the time. I've talked to someone at a bus stop about this stuff. I don't know. I've always been open that way, but anyhow, sorry.
Okay. Well, cool. All right. Then we're kindred spirits. you know, I guess another presence or a presence on this record is this idea of God that kind of comes in. And I know God can represent a lot of things, but the way that I hear it in the lyrics is this, you know, entity that's supposed to be all-knowing and all-powerful and everything, but doesn't really seem to deliver.
Yeah, I think that's pretty accurate. That's kind of the role that it plays in the music. I was raised Catholic, and I'm not a practicing Catholic. I haven't been for a long time. I would go to church with Ma, you know, when I was home for like Christmas and stuff, because it would make her happy. But yeah, my brain was trained to think of God in this way, in this omnipresent, ever knowing thing that could intervene or that is in some kind of control of something. And I would find myself getting so angry at that thing, you know, being raised that way, feeling very, very guilty about normal human things that I would do, and then just being so mad at this other thing because I believed that it could actually step in or something. And, you know, with Mom being sick too, it's like that fueled, I don't believe necessarily that thing's there, but when Mom got sick, and her being so devout and such a wonderful person, she just did everything right, you know, and she just lived, she lived a pretty pure kind of life, I guess, if that's a thing. And when all that goes down too, it just, it makes you even more angry at this thing, if it was to exist. And, but yeah, it's like this deadbeat dad or something. It's like Christian deadbeat dad that doesn't care for its flock. And just, you know, just, I don't, who knows what this thing is. And at the end of the day, I don't necessarily, I believe in some kind of source. I feel it. I feel like that thing kind of has a lot to do with my writing. A lot of times I don't feel like I'm even writing these songs. Like, it's more like channeling or something. It just kind of dumps in and it happens really fast. I don't really think about it. I give it very little thought. It's almost like I get very, very still, and, or a melody will come to me, but. And then beyond that, I don't really sit down and purposely write a song about anything. It's just kind of, it's always been that way too. It just kind of happens. And it happens really fast. And then maybe I'll make an edit or two because it sings a little better or something. But yeah, so I do have a feeling that there's something, maybe not some conscious omnipresent being, but there's some kind of energy out there. But I guess, yeah, on this album, I'm definitely taking some swings at the more traditional idea of what this thing is, and not just from my perspective, but for maybe from other people's perspectives too on the songs, because I feel like lives that have impacted me kind of worms seems negative, but you know, they worm their way into the music in some way too, where sometimes it's about other people and not so much about me or anything, or I don't really know what it's about particularly. I decode it. It comes in and then I'm like, okay, what is this about? Sometimes it's really obvious to me, and then other times it's not. But you know, since I have more of a team around me now, they were making me write like short descriptions of what the songs were about, and I was just like, I don't know. Don't ask me. I'm open to interpretation, man. Some days I think I know what they're about, and other days I don't have a clue. But I know that they do seem to have a profound impact on people when they hear them. That's kind of why I started doing it again, because it's not too rare for me to play to a room and start hearing sniffling and start seeing people wiping their face, and it tends to like get into people and kind of crack them open a little bit. So I felt like if the music can do that for people, then money or no money, like for me, like I flipped it into a life of service in a way. Like, I sleep in this car out here on the road a lot of times, and truck stops, and it's not an easy life. I was in Europe busking and living in hostels, and just like I've been scraping by pretty much my whole life. That not having an income thing or a strong income can really try to beat you away from being an artist and like put you in your place. And it did put me in my place a few times where I just didn't want to do it anymore. But then when I got diagnosed and I started looking at life way differently, I started realizing that the storm I was in had a name, and then I started basing everything off like scientific evidence and like and my what I thought the science was. And it seemed like singing songs to people really helped them either have peace or process something or help them take a step or something like that. And then for me, that seemed like payment enough. So I said, all right, if I'm like a pauper forever, that's fine. This is just going to be a life of service from here on out. And if things happen, and maybe I'm in a, I have a, I live in a home or something or something great, but if not, like kind of like music monk style with like, but more like a friar, because I like to drink beer. But that's I guess I don't know, I went way off track there, man. But yeah, it's kind of just a life of service for me for good, and it's weird because I was just at Muhammad Ali's grave yesterday. I'm a big boxing fan, and I boxed a little bit my younger years, and I'd never been to his grave before. He's one of my all-time heroes. I absolutely love Muhammad Ali and what he stood for and how he fought the system and fought, for civil rights and of course his incredible boxing talents. But I went to his grave and I never really know what it said on it, and I don't know, try not to cry again here. I walked up to it, and the what it says on his grave is something along the lines of service to others is what guarantees your room in heaven, or it's something similar. I might be paraphrasing that, and I apologize, Ali. But that hit me really hard too, because that's been that, I've been meditating on that a lot, like service to others, and that's what keeps me going every day. And then to walk up to my hero's grave, and that's what it says on his grave. For me, one of the greatest humans to ever live. It just nailed it in even deeper. And
Yeah.
I had a quite an overwhelming moment there, over there. But yeah.
Yeah, I guess that's the, it's interesting because I was raised Catholic too, and I guess I get that. It's very much social action Catholics. And so I guess, it's like if I think of a concept of God, it's actually this thing that's probably within all of us that's doing these acts of service. It's when somebody, becomes a teacher or they become a doctor and they're trying to alleviate suffering for their, fellow humans, that's where that's really at, for me.
Yeah, I feel that too. Yeah, I feel that.
Yeah. Yeah. And Muhammad Ali, I trust that you've seen When We Were Kings.
Oh, yes. Many times. incredible.
There's one other thing I wanted to ask you about too, with the record, and there's this relationship as well with the natural world, with nature and animals. I think specifically of Animal Orchard, and talking just about interpretations. I'm really resisting putting anything concrete on your songs because I feel like I could revisit them and get something different at a later time. But that, and for me, Animal Orchard was just like, There's so much beauty in the natural world. How did we as humans get to be the ones who, you know, have dominion over it, you know, with all our foibles and so forth?
Yeah, that's a head scratcher. Yeah, that's a question I ask myself too. It's strange, you know. I'm kind of obsessed with the natural world. It's hard for me to not get sad out here on the road sometimes, because when I get on the highway and I just drive around and I see McDonald's sign, all these signs and all this stuff blaring in my face, and I always try to like fantasize about what it was like before these roads were down and before all this stuff was here, and it breaks my heart in a way. I feel like we're so far, as a civilization, we're so far away from the natural order. It's hard to maintain hope in our future, but you have to. I see this constant like push and pull of nature scrapping for its life and for our life, and then these powers that be and this greed, like attempting to gut it for it. And I think that's like, that relates into the record and the music a lot. Yeah, nature always seems to, the natural world always seems to find its way in there. And it's kind of like this little battle going on between man and the natural order of things, and me fantasizing about what it would be like to be back in times where it was a little less technological. And, you know, I worked on some farms in my life, and it was really mind blowing for me. It's real simple, but I'm pretty simple, dude. But just taking a little seed and putting it into the ground and just seeing what food came from it in a season totally blew my mind. And it just made me think, like, what the hell are we doing here? Well, how could there possibly be hunger in the world? How could there possibly be people without? And everything we need, the Mother Earth provides us, and it doesn't take a lot to help it along. It seems so simple, and we just seem so far removed from that now, and it's just hard to wrap your head around, you know.
Yeah,
it's hard to wrap your head around, and yeah, I don't know how the hell we got in control of it, but it's maybe I would have preferred the dolphins to be in control. Yeah, dolphins or whales could take charge. That would be sweet.
Yeah.
Or octopus or something. It's just, yeah, it's hard to not be so frustrated all the time with the way things are going. But you have to maintain hope somehow. I think we could certainly pull from the indigenous people and what they would believe and how they lived with nature. I've been lucky enough to spend some time on some reservations and learn a lot about Native culture. And I was engaged to a Native woman for a while. And I'm a bit Native myself, Wabanaki, Passamaquoddy. But I think they really had kind of had it figured out, you know. I think other indigenous cultures of the world too, like, they kind of had it figured out. I mean, nobody's perfect. No culture or civilization is perfect. There's corruption in every story, but at least in how they lived in accordance with nature, I think was wise. And if we could find some way to maybe use technology with those kind of ideas in mind, maybe we could get to a better place on this earth. But at the end of the day, I'm just an uneducated man. I'm a dreamer. I don't really know. I don't know anything, but I think that would be, if anything could maybe save what we're in right now, I think adopting that relationship with the earth that those cultures do, it would maybe be a good idea.
You've been listening to a conversation with singer-songwriter Jacob Augustine. His new album, I Love You Forever, is out May 22nd via Team Love Records. You can learn more about the album via jacobaugustine.bandcamp.com, which also provides links to his other online presence.
You can learn more about this podcast and all programming on our station by visiting our website, kmuw.org. Send us your questions and comments at info@kmuw.org and find all the latest programming notes on that website as well. As always, we like to remind you that our theme music is composed and performed by Torrin Anderson.